Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug. But I ended up connecting to the world around me. A world where each sunset was painted. Where I felt adventures pulse with every step. And where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota. So little time.
Hey parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Spohr and Nick Pollack.
What is happening? Welcome to another episode of the Fireside Chat. You can hear the crackle of the flame on this lovely day outside, but it is nice and cozy in here because I am joined by the wonderful in his teal robe, Paul Spohr. Hi.
Hello, Nick. It's great to talk with you by the fire here as we turn the calendar into May. Feels like, you know, this happens every year. We wait so long for the season to start. Now that it's here, it's like zipping. It's already May. Are you kidding me? But I love that we're kind of, you know, in the full swing. The routine is back. You know, even some of the negative parts of routine, aka 5-game weeks, don't love those. I want as much baseball as possible. But yeah, I feel great. A lot of pitchers popping off and pitchers starting to come up, which is going to be, you know, kind of our main topic today.
And I also want to mention, I really enjoy the format of this show with you, Spohr.
Me too.
The fact that I'm all about all energy all the time. And no, this one is for us to bring it back, relax, be like, hey, look at this wonderful thing that's going on. And this is a good topic today of just the young guys, the real excitement as I talk so softly. These are the mysterious names every year. And last year, Spohr, I was terrible at this. I remember embarrassing myself in First Pitch Florida when someone asked about Bobby Miller and go, I don't know. I don't know who that is. And I remember thinking, my gosh, the Dodgers are going to need help in that staff this season. Let's go after Michael Grove, when I should have known about Bobby Miller.
Hey, I liked Michael Grove didn't do too, that. By the way. Just want to say.
This year, fair enough. He just has a good slider and unfortunately not enough.
He's going to be a good reliever for them for a while.
There it is. Exactly. However, this year we have data. We have more data than ever. Mm-hmm. We have, there were more tools out there analyzing AAA StatCast numbers because all AAA stadiums have StatCast available. And if you didn't know, Pitcherless is going to be putting out our minor league PLV tool in the next week or two. I saw a preview, showed it on the stream today, that utilizes PLV versus major league talent. So if you see a PLV mark for a pitcher, it's not based on minor league performance. It's based on relative pitchers in the majors.
That's same pretty sweet.
So you can actually do hitter assessment. That's not just plate discipline.
Mm-hmm.
I know, hitters. I know, guys. But we'll get back to pitchers here. And what's so exciting for me is I did a top 100 pitching prospects this year. I don't know if you remember that. And part of my top 400 was 100 pitchers not in the majors currently. So I know some of these names for once.
Look at you.
I know. It's weird. They're giving me so much data. But then again, a lot of them are like single A, double A. I didn't have Christian Scott as part of my Mets preview initially because he only pitched in single A.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, he's doing some amazing things. He just came up. We're going to talk about him. But before we do that, let's talk about the guys that actually have appeared. And first and foremost, there's Jared Jones. Where were you on Jared Jones early? What was your thought about it? Where are you now?
You know, coming into the season, I like Jared Jones for sure. But as is generally the case with young pitchers like him, I was cautious, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's hard not to be because we remember these ones and they stand out like Jared Jones. But this is not the norm to come and just be great immediately. So, you know, he was discussed in my fantasy redraft and dynasty prospects to know, highlighted as a good pitcher, but he didn't even get a full capsule. He was in my other names to know, which that's kind of my little embarrassment piece there. If you're saying you're bummed about not having Christian Scott, I put him in the keep tabs on these guys, and the guys I wrote up were Skeens, Harrison, AJ Smith, Shauver, Jackson Jobe, and Mason Miller. So he still got a little block of text, but he didn't get the full write-up, which is Jared Jones ended up deserving. Now, that article has to come out very early. That was on February 20th. So we're not in the spring. We don't have Jared Jones popping off the way he did. And I made the pivot as we got through the spring. He's been wonderful, though. One of the things that I was better at this year was I don't really care about how many innings he's going to get. Give me these innings while they're happening. Jared Jones has been great. I might not have him in September or even August. Don't care. One of the best pitchers going right now and must-see TV for me. I don't miss his starts. And if I do, I do the rewatch. Like I've watched every Jared Jones start so far.
Yeah, he's so that's actually really interesting is Jared Jones' last start, great. One before that was not.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see
that? He's allowed.
Too? Yeah, sure. The main difference to me there was the concerns I had in the preseason. And me and Eric Samolsky on our On the Corner were just hyping up Jared Jones. We were just praying and praying and praying that the Pirates would give him a shot. They said that he would be in contention for the rotation. It looked like he had a spot. Then they added Eric Lauer. They added Domingo and all these moves. And we're just thinking, oh, no, oh, no. And to see the Pirates actually go off and do it, I think is so shocking considering we didn't really expect them to be competitive this year. We expected the Pirates to hold on to Jones later on in the year. And go for Super 2 stuff and really push back the arbitration clock. So to see Jones come out and then also be better, what I saw in spring was not really the guy I saw in the majors. I saw some questionable command, missing a lot more arm east-west than I expected to have, and being two pitches and not really wondering, well, not getting the best data, so that we couldn't tell if he had the flattest approach. We couldn't tell great numbers on IVB. But now that we see it, Jones is absurd. He is Spencer Strider. That was the comp I gave early on.
About that struggle start against San Francisco? Yeah. That was the tough part. It was kind of a wasted start in San Francisco against a good team. But I will say one thing I took from it was the fastball wasn't working, right? And frankly, the slider wasn't great that game either. Mm-hmm. Were you encouraged by the fact that it was 22% changeup usage, that he tried to go to the third pitch? It didn't really bail him out, but it stemmed the tide on it being like a nightmarish outing for Jones, where Jared Jones allowed just 3 runs, 5 innings on 8 base runners with 3 Ks. So again, easily his worst outing, but not one of those, you know, wipes away 3 good starts because you gave up 7 earned. What did you think about that changeup usage as an avenue to combat the lack of fastball effectiveness?
I mean, I'm happy that it's there. I don't really think that that actually will be a proper option for Jones if his fastball is what it was in that game again. Because let's be honest, if Jones doesn't have his four-seamer dominating, doesn't matter. That changeup shouldn't normally bail him out. And the fastball in that one also was concerning for 2 reasons. One, its velocity dipped more than it usually does. Throughout the games, Jared Jones goes from about 98, 99 and goes to about 95 or so as the game goes on. This one was 93 and change at the end of it. And he also had far worse fastball command. He really didn't know where this thing was going a lot.
Yeah.
Which is atypical for Jones. He's actually been so good and nailing the top of the zone. It's why it's one of the highest PLV pitches there in baseball. for four seamers because Jones, POV takes into account location. So that's been great to see. And that was really concerning for both the velocity and the location. And both things are indication of injury, right? It's not just velocity. It's also, are you able to spot it? And he wasn't. So that was my fear there for Jones. To see that rectified and recalibrated is wonderful for Jones. So I'm okay there. I don't really think the changeup is something to depend on. Oftentimes, it's especially a two-pitch guy. If you don't have both of those working, you are going to struggle.
That's the fear with the two-pitch guys, right? Even they don't have a deep enough arsenal.
There, he was able to make that not the worst thing in the world, which is absolutely a positive. However, I think that was more so of an anomaly, and I didn't know how much of an exception it was at the time. So if that was going to be like, cool, this is going to be like every third start or something, like, no, it's not going to be that positive of a result normally, because it's the Giants, and like, it was a surprise that he threw those many changes, but then they wouldn't know. Yeah.
Oh, a lesser team or better team does punish Jared Jones more for that start, but I was at least somewhat encouraged. Again, the changeup's not good enough. You're right. But I like that he was like, I got to try something else because the fastball isn't working. Instead of trying to blunt force, make that work and throw bad fastballs, he's like, well, let me try something else. So that was encouraging. But he's obviously been, you know, far and away the best rookie going. Again, you can count Yoshi and Shota. They are technically rookies, of course. A lot of prospect lists have stopped including the guys who come over from Asia, which I think makes sense. In the spirit of what we're talking about. But what about Mason Miller, who broke camp? And before we got on the pod here, I was giving you your kudos a little early. Obviously, it's only May 7th, but just the way you were propping him up, saying, listen, I understand the role might be goofy, the team isn't very good, but at the Arizona Fall, you're like, I love Mason Miller. This guy is so good. I'm interested regardless. And I was like, I don't know, man. He's not going to start. How many innings are we going to get? And I was looking for all the reasons not to instead of just trusting the talent. So I want to give you your love on that. He's been excellent too. What have you seen so far out of Mason Miller? And then the big question tacked onto that is he going to stick in the bullpen or do they commit to giving him back? Because one of the things Eno talks about is how sticky the bullpen is, meaning once you get there and you really excel, sometimes you wind up staying there. Where are you at on Mason Miller, 14 excellent innings into his 2024?
Well, I appreciate the kudos and all. I do want to mention that the biggest pushback you had is he won't get wins, which he isn't.
True. But he has 8 saves, which is incredible.
Right. I didn't expect that whatsoever. Of course, I wasn't thinking of Mason Miller the closer because I don't care about closers.
True. You're all about those starters.
It's like kickers to me. To me, in football, it's like they should make every field goal.
It's like the old school situation when you were in grade school and you could get the right math answer, but you didn't show the proper work. You got the right answer, but you didn't show the saves work, but you got the right answer. So you get the win for me.
Yeah, this stuff is, I appreciate that. This stuff is so good. Obviously, he's must watch TV, which is so fun. All the pitchers that are must watch TV are just. That's what makes a game incredible for me.
Totally agree.
And I think, yeah, he's going to be a bullpen guy. I mean, it makes all the sense. For Mason Miller, if I'm Mason Miller, I want to be a bullpen guy. I'm killing it in this role. I don't have the fear of getting hurt before my free agency. You know, I have value. I'm clearly dope and feel dope. And yeah, do it. Like, he's going to be a reliever for a while, though. I'm thinking about other closers who have converted in the past. And there was the whole Jabba Chamberlain thing, and that wasn't good.
One of the biggest nightmares possible,
right?
The bouncing back and forth, the Jabba rules, etc.
And why do you guys become relievers? One, it's either bad command, and they can't do that. Two, it's a lack of depth in their arsenal. And three, it's injury related. And I think for Mason Miller, it's more of the latter than anything else. But
it's almost exclusively that. Although. He doesn't have a great changeup, but he hasn't had to use anything of a changeup in the bullpen either. So we don't know how it would develop.
Yeah.
But it is really the injury concern that they want to try to protect the best.
We've even seen like DL Hall was killing it in that position. The Brewers said, no, we want to do this. I thought the same thing. And, it's not just a lower velocity fastball. It's now an arm angle change, and that's not good. Mm-hmm. Same thing with AJ Puck. And Jordan Hicks is the current experiment with this. It does make more sense with Jordan Hicks because it is sinker focused.
Exactly.
Focused. And not, you know, and that speaks more to getting efficient outs, right? But he just needs to throw more strikes. It's great to see this with Mason Miller. I'm stoked to watch more of it. I agree with the whole Yamamoto and Shota stuff. Have you purchased your I'm in AGA shirt yet for Shota Imanaga?
No, but I need to because he is on one of my main event teams, and he's been the ace. He's been the AGA ace is going to ace. It's been unbelievable. You know, Bibee was actually my first pitcher selected. I went a little bit lighter on the starters there, so Bibee was my number one.
How do you feel about Bibee right now?
He's a lock in the lineup. Like, you don't take him out. So to me, his struggles aren't actionable, but I'm not feeling great.
Yeah.
Like, and he's blown opportunities against, we were just talking about that with Jared Jones, blown an opportunity at San Francisco. Some of Bibee's worst starts are the season opener at Oakland, a dud against the White Sox.
Yeah.
And then of course he randomly drops seven scoreless at Atlanta. So he's having one of those topsy-turvy years. And then even his last outing just over the weekend, six earned against the Angels. So is he like playing down to his competition type of thing? It's very bizarre with Bibee. So again, I don't think any of it's actionable, but it's been a little underwhelming.
Bibee is a weird one. He was a weird one for me last year. Last year I was the guy that's like, hey, I know he has like a 3 ERA, but also he doesn't know where his slider and changeup are going, and that really bothers me. And I was like, okay, well, I need his four seam release to go here, and then those go down. And then Bibee actually started to do that better. Like, his four seamer is getting located upstairs as he wants to. And he had some starts, I think, against Atlanta. Like, he did such a good job of getting his changeup and slider down. And like, that works. That's great. And then the most recent one, he didn't get his slider and changeup down. And this four seamer allows a lot of ICR, that is ideal contact rate, because it is so steep. It is like 85th percentile steep. And that means... Oof. This pitch is giving hitters more opportunities to hit it upstairs than they would if it were down. It's just matching the bat path longer. So I don't know. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just going to sit here in my armchair and say, like, change everything you've ever done, Bibee, and throw low four seamers with changeups and sliders underneath it. Just take the entirety of your approach and just chunk, copy and paste it into the lower tier. I don't think that's going to happen, but I hope that Bibee can figure out the changeup and slider. The fact that those are the ones that are going out right now makes me a little encouraged that he can be better.
Yeah.
But it's not too surprising that, like, there is some, like, you're talking about against matchups, like, he's matchup agnostic. And that makes sense to me because it's more just about, can you execute your thing?
It's the execution. And there are certain guys like that, that is it's worth kind of, you know, highlighting that sometimes. I talk about that on a higher end with someone like Hunter Green. Like, don't try to time the wrong outings. When he's off, me, Nick, and seven others got a chance against him. But when he's on, the Braves, Dodgers, super team can get dominated. Like, that's the kind of talent that he has too. Does it differently than what we're saying here with Bibee, but there are certain guys like that are matchup agnostic. I like phrase there.
So moving on to Christian Scott.
Yeah. So he's the big one now.
Yeah.
And I don't know how clued in you are on the main event and everything over at NFBC. He was the big purchase of the year so far. $300 out of 1,000 bids, 300 plus across the many main events. The lowest he went was 197, again, out of 1,000 that you have for the full year. There was tons of love for Christian Scott with the Mets. Where are you at with him? He's had the gem already too, which of course raised the prices. Is he a game changer? Can the Mets have their front liner here?
Oh man. So first and foremost, two first names, right?
Yeah.
So absolutely not.
Also two last names, both consistently used as last names.
Quick side note. The greatest nickname I think that everyone forgot, which is fine, is for Williams Perez. If you remember him from on Atlanta.
I do.
And his nickname was Sir Dub because he had two surnames and his first letter of his name is W.
That's pretty good. I like that.
Okay. I'm going to hold that in my heart forever.
Williams Perez. First. Yeah. The fact that it was the S there, the Williams, right. It's like Rogers Hornsby.
That's right. And I'm not too surprised that Christian Scott was that high of a bid. If you guys are wondering too, in NFBC, you can't add someone to your team if they are in the minors. You can't
Correct. Unless they were dropped and previously cut.
Right.
Which Christian Scott wasn't enough on the radar. Somebody like Skeens, if somebody got, he was drafted everywhere, but you'd be stupid to cut him, but there might be somebody who cuts him. But yeah, Christian Scott was somebody you had to wait until he was up.
Absolutely. So, I want to go definitely into a large dive onto Christian Scott here. And we're going to do that after this break.
Hey, pet parents, are you searching for the perfect place for your dog to play? Check out Camp Bow Wow. Our safe and supervised doggy daycare and boarding ensures your pup gets the socialization they crave while giving you peace of mind. With our certified staff and clean and spacious facilities, your dog will have a blast making friends and staying active. Join the Camp Bow Wow Pack today. Your first day is free. Visit us at campbowwow.com. Franchise opportunities available.
Whether you're shopping for grads, getting an early gift for dad, or just looking for a little something new or used for your shelf, you'll find it at HPB. And you'll get almost everything for an extra 20% off during the big sale at Half Price Books this Memorial Day weekend. Saturday, May 25th through Monday, May 27th, save big in-store at your local Half Price Books and at HPB.com. Offer cannot be combined with other coupons. Exclusions apply. To learn more, visit HPB.com.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease and a whole lot of love, you transform 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. LED headlights, spoilers, whatever you need. eBay Motors has it at affordable prices. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 7. My trip to South Dakota was the best summer ever. Now I don't need to go to Mars, because I've been to the Badlands. And I caught a bigger walleye than Dad when we went to the Missouri River. Then I rode my bike through these huge rocks called Needles. Ooh, I also saw my first herd of bison, even a fuzzy furry baby one. I can't wait to go back and see more. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Christian Scott. Who is this guy to be want him? I mean, obviously, right? Four seamer that's very flat, throws it well upstairs. It's a pitch he throws against righties and lefties. That's great. Sweeper is awesome as well. It's what we knew from Christian Scott, four seamer sweeper. That's cool. It looked great. Good stuff there. He has a slider that it's not really a gyro slider. It's kind of like a cutter more than, than like a sweeper, right? And what's interesting is he didn't really face any lefties. He threw like a couple or faced like a couple against the Rays. And he tugged too many of these sliders, I think, too far glove side. And how he utilized it was kind of like it was a sweeper, though. And I expected to see it more as a strike pitch. And it was more of just like interchangeable between the sweeper, which was a little surprising to me. And he did have like a splitter. There was a couple of them against lefties. And I don't trust it. And neither should you. No shock there. Which then makes me think, well, hold on. You took down the Rays. You had a tough first inning, then you just kind of cruise after that. The Rays are not the pinnacle of offenses at the moment.
No, they're not playing.
You didn't face lefties.
Only two.
And your best thing is a four-seamer against lefties, which is fine. But think of like Bryce Miller against lefties. That's kind of what Christian Scott is dealing with. However, he has a better weapon against righties because Bryce Miller just has his four-seamer, which, by the way, guys, it's better than Christian Scott's. I like Christian Scott's, but Bryce Miller has a better four-seamer.
Yeah.
But Scott has this pair, really, of secondaries that you could say work well against righties. So I do have some trepidation just because I need to see something else show up against left-handers. And I think a lot of teams will crowd and stack the lineup lefty against Scott.
I'm surprised the Rays didn't, because they're usually a team that takes advantage there. The tough part about Scott, you spend all that money and he gets Atlanta this week.
Sure.
Is it a situation where you would consider skipping it, or do you pay a lot of money on a free agent guy and you automatically use him just because you spent the money? Because I'm torn. I could see myself sitting, like if I've got the option.
Situation you're in, of course, if it's a daily league, all that kind of stuff, see, blah, blah, blah. But I'll put it this way. I start him because I like to have fun in fantasy baseball.
I'm with that.
And I just want to have the guy in and root for him.
Because if he dominates the Braves, you spend $300. Maybe it's one of those things you have to think about, okay, these scenarios. If he gets killed by the Braves and you started him, okay, I knew the risk I was taking. Mm-hmm. Is that a bigger pain than if he dominates seven scoreless for Christian Scott against the Braves and you benched him? Which is the bigger pain point to me? That's where I'm at usually with it. And yeah, you've actually swayed me. I could not miss. I'd be so frustrated if I missed the gem. I'll take on the risk of the bomb out.
It's so funny you say this because I actually give that exact argument and I go to the other side. I'm saying you should just be happy that you have a good guy moving forward. And it's just a positive if he does well. But in one scenario, it actually hurts you, you know?
There is a point to be said there because I had a day this week, or I had a week this season where my bench guys dominated. These were hitters. Hitters are the guys that come up and they try to swing the bat, Nick.
Oh, the cardboard cutouts. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. And I was so mad. And one person, a lot of people were laughing with me and at me, and that's fine. But one person was like, hey, you should actually be kind of happy about that because if your bench never pops off, then your bench probably sucks. Right? Exactly. Like you probably don't have good players on your bench. So he's like, think about it in the positive way of like, at least you've got these great guys to turn to. So that's a good point with Scott. But again, my official word is I will start him because let's see what he can do against a tough.
Yeah, I totally get that. Now that's like kind of the end of the guys we have seen. I mean, there's some Max Meyer you could say in there.
Sure. He's been up. He'll be back.
I'm not the biggest fan. I think it's just a big slider thing. And then the rest, supporting cast isn't that great. The Marlins aren't winning too many games.
2025 for me with Myers.
Personally. Yeah. I need to see something else. I need to see something on top of the slider. Mm-hmm. And it might just be slider and kitchen sink, which can work if there's enough decency among everything. That might actually be there now. But to me, it's just not really something I'm excited about. There's Jack Leiter, who is making his second start this week. Yeah. I saw him against Detroit. We did a live stream here on playback.tv/pitcherless. It was really fun. And he didn't pitch nearly as bad as the line suggested.
Exactly. Completely agree.
And so I hope that he comes through against the Athletics. Are you going to start Jack Leiter in a 12-teamer?
Yeah.
Against the Athletics?
That, you know, if you can't pick on the Athletics, when do you really feel, again, they're a better team than... They're like standard bad as opposed to horrendously bad. But if you can't start a pitcher against them, where do you really feel comfortable? I say go for it with Leiter. The one thing they do is hit some homers, but I think they hit better homers against lefties than righties. So yeah, I would take the shot with Leiter against Oakland, see what I've got. Because I agree with you. He pitched so much better than that box score.
Yeah, right. And he might be stepping in for Eovaldi. So we might
could get be a little bit of a period with him.
That might be fun. It's a four-seamer that grades out really well when he gets that upstairs. I don't hate his slider. And he turned to his curveball later on in the Detroit game because he needs something else. Mm-hmm. But it does feel very much like four-seamer. It's a good one, though. And please do not throw a down and in first pitch fastball to Javier Baez with the man on second base. Like, what are you doing? Why would you do that?
Why would you anything on the inner half to him?
First pitch fastball, too? Like,
correct.
Oh, on like, second base? Like, no.
That's like in MLB The Show when you can play the practice mode and you can pick the pitches you want. Oh, that's really? What Baez would pick.
Oh, man. Yeah, absolutely. My gosh. Yeah, it's also the same pitch that Gary Sanchez hit off of Cole Reagans yesterday. I'm just like, no. It would have been so good again. Okay. So those are the ones I think that we've seen. Is there another prospect pitcher that's kind of come up? We've gotten a look at him. And I feel like there's maybe one other that I'm forgetting. They were just like, yeah. That's good.
Well, Simeon Woods Richardson's been doing some things. Kind of he had a good start yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, Mitchell Parker out of nowhere. Luis Heel is still a prospect.
Oh, and that's actually something I wanted to bring up with Jones was that I had Heel above Jones in the preseason. Just because
I did too.
He had three pitches, and I believed more in the changeup and slider getting strikes than it has.
Yep.
And also the higher wins, right? Yankees versus Pirates just made more sense. But yeah, Heel, where are you now? He's going against the Astros, I believe it's today. I know we're recording this at 1 p.m. Eastern time on Tuesday. And I'm going to do it.
I started him.
Throws enough strikes with his changeup and slider. I think that's what he's been doing more so the last three games.
Yeah.
But it's tough. If he does, it is. Drop easily.
Went and dominated in Baltimore, which is encouraging after getting knocked around a little bit in Milwaukee. But I like where Luis Heel's at right now. He's a guy I really liked coming into the year. And while Houston's struggles are not mostly offensively related. It's mostly their lack of pitching. So mm-hmm. they can get you. But Heal for me is a guy that I'm looking for reasons to start. In a weekly where you have to get, you have to start him now to get the two step, Houston and at Tampa Bay, that was an easy decision. But even sure. in daily leagues where I can be a little bit more prudent with it, I'm still going with Heal. I like enough of what he's done. I understand the downside. It was prominent in the Milwaukee start, 5-5, mm-hmm. but still got you 6 Ks. And that's the thing too. Even when he's off, and gives you 4 or 5 innings with 4 or 5 runs, you're probably still going to get 5, 6, 7 Ks. And if he goes the 5, there's a world where he can go 5 innings, give up 5 runs, and still maybe snake a dub because yeah, the Yankees right. are good enough to do that. So yes, I'm with Luis Heal pretty consistently.
Yeah, I hope it works out for Heal if he gets enough strikes. Like, his stuff is insanely good. A four-seamer can be
just
phenomenal.
Trust the stuff. Do yeah. not nibble. Good
yeah,
sir.
It's so annoying. There are a couple others, actually. There's obviously Mason Black, who just came up.
Yeah, what do you think of him?
Four-seamer in 92. Upstairs is not bad. It's decently flat. I think it commands it pretty well. He has a sinker, I believe, in there, too.
You know, sweeper is nice. Let me interrupt you for 1 sec. You know how hard it is to get my mindset in flat being a positive? That's usually thrown as like a negative word, right?
And I was always curious what that meant before. I think it was just calling it dead zone. Is what that meant, as in like flat being no vert or horizontal ride.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I hate how pitchers say ride is upstairs. It's like ride is horizontal, rise is upstairs.
Rise
is
upstairs.
You need to yeah. differentiate.
Yeah, sorry. Absolutely. But no, it's just like learning and flat. Cause like we in OTP, we talk about a flat profile where a guy's yeah. the same versus left and versus righty. Mm. And so they're like, they're not super dynamic. So right. I just usually know it as a negative term. But when you're talking about fastballs, that's yeah. a plus. We flat, like flat.
It means you are intersecting the bat path less if you're yes. throwing it upstairs, and you're intersecting it more when it's downstairs. So you don't want to throw flat downstairs. You're going to have more chances for the batter to hit the ball if it's steeper upstairs, right? Flatter, less chance.
You know, the Yankees got another good one. Jose Buto is a prospect.
Oh, don't you? Well. That's a Met.
I said Yankees. Sorry, I meant Mets. Oh my gosh. Sorry. Mixing those two up is a cardinal
sin. How dare
you
say that we have a Toby? I'm just kidding.
I know. We just talked about a Yankee. No, and I know he's not like great or whatever, but he's been another impact prospect.
Yeah, absolutely.
2.57 ERA so far in 5 starts, but he's 0-2, so he's not much mm-hmm. to show for it. Is Buto somebody you think is an actual fantasy impact guy the rest of the way?
I mean, I don't know. He's a matchup guy. It's Cardinals so. Next. I'm fine with Jose Buto there.
Yeah.
I don't really think he does anything that exceptional. Sometimes it's a good changeup. Sometimes he gets away with four seamers, but it's nothing really that great for him. And with Mason Black, it's
back to Black
quickly. Is sweeper is really good. It does worry me a little bit against lefties because there isn't, I think the changeup needs a little bit more work. He gets the Reds in Oracle Park though on Sunday, Mason Black. I would do that. I think there's enough here for him to get enough strikes with four seamers and sweepers to be effective there. Would you be starting him in a 12 teamer?
I can get there. Yeah. Like it's a situation in a 12 where you might not have to start Mason Black. You might have better options, but if he's who you land on against mm-hmm. Cincy in San Francisco specifically, yes, I can get there. Again, it wasn't a great outing at Philly yesterday, but I didn't expect it to be because I think Philly's tough, but I saw enough within Mason Black's arsenal that keeps me intrigued enough to take the Cincy shot. And then if he does well, you get Colorado at home. So in San Francisco again next week. So I really like that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think you got the next two starts here for Mason Black to try to show you something and figure out if we've got a fantasy piece here.
I don't think the fastball is good enough, but again, we've seen this with the Giants before. As long as you are a Toby, like you just have enough there. It's a good enough park. It's
exactly,
you know, I can't.
What about a couple Cubs real quick before we move into like who's coming? Ben Brown and Jordan Wicks. Wicks, you know, broke camp, been with the team all year,
right?
But Ben Brown's been up recently and now getting starts. Do you like either of them as fantasy impact guys that can breach the 12-team area consistently?
So this is actually one of the topics I talked about with Tyone last week, which was so ridiculous and so much fun.
And Wick's currently hurt, by the way, just to throw that in, but just saying like when he comes back and everything.
And Tyone was saying, especially to Wicks, being like, hey, man, your four-seamer is great and your changeup's great, but you got to like work on efficiency a little bit with what you do. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to always be that four-seamer whiff, because Tyone has an interesting mentality that I think is getting aged out. It's a little archaic, and I'm on board with him trying to bring it back. because if you look at like the guys who dominate a ton through 7+ innings, it's like Logan Webb and Peak Alcantara and Wheeler.
Fromber.
Those guys are not CSW darlings, right? And why is that? Because those are it's inefficient to really be a CSW darling unless you're 100% of it. Like, you need to get outs in play.
Yeah.
And what Tyone thinks now is like, look, there are times that, yeah, I can get that whiff at 1-0 and a four seamer upstairs, but now I don't really have that four seamer later in the count as much. And what else do I have to go to? And Wicks, he was saying like, Wicks has got a much better fastball this year. It's great. Awesome. He's not saving it the right way. And it's an interesting philosophy with it. I don't know if I totally agree. We had a fun conversation just back and forth saying like, look, Wicks, it just needs a cutter or a slider or something else to pair with a changeup. And he had some moments doing that. And I think there is development to be had with Wicks here, that he is tweaking and adding things. And it also works with the same context with Ben Brown. I said, Ben Brown needs a third pitch, man. He doesn't have it. He goes, yeah, he has a fastball. He tries to sneak by in the first pitch. Great. But he knows he can't do that again. And does he trust the curveball to throw for a strike? You know, he would use the example of like Pete Alonso. And he's like, yeah, that's a terrible feeling. I've been there before. And that's Ben is trying to figure that one out.
A great way to think about it.
Right. So what Ben Brown is doing is he's trying to learn a changeup. And I brought up to Tyone, be like, yo, man, you were kind of like Ben Brown, right? When you first came up, it was fastball curve mostly. And, you know, sure, there were some sinkers in there. There was like a circle change. And the thing that you added was a slider that became everything. And I feel like Ben Brown has that angle. He goes, yeah, I think that's something that he's going to be working on. Is that over the top kind of cutter almost for a strike. So, and then we joked about the year of the cutter because it is the year of the cutter, not the splitter. Yeah. But yeah, so those two guys, Ben Brown, I think is more of a senior as a reliever right now. He called him a super reliever. And I see that completely. I think Jordan Wicks is good and has an opportunity to be better, but there's still one last piece with the four seamer changeup. Those are great. You need one more, like a slider or cutter to really get those strikes and be effective.
Okay, that's a great analysis there. And he, Ben Brown is in the bullpen right now, but he'll be back in the rotation. He's going to be in and out until he like really takes over a spot. Tyone's return is part of the reason why Javier Assad's ascent. And now, would you rather, if you were at the helm of the Cubs, would you go Wesneski or Brown in the rotation right now?
I think that you would go, I would go Cade Horton.
Well, that's fair. But what about the two that they're choosing from?
The way I see it is you go Wesneski. I mean, it's, I think until Ben Brown gets that cutter.
Yeah. He makes sense as a multi-inning reliever.
Yeah. And Wesneski, honestly, too. And I think just piggybacking the two of them makes the
most
sense.
That's true. That actually makes the most sense. 3+ innings for each of them. And then you can really get the best out of them.
Also, here's the problem is that Assad, I don't think, is going to last too long. I think I call this a Vargas rule right now with Assad. I don't think his stuff is that great. His command is good enough. He's getting through and moving his cutter and sinker well enough. But we see this fade. And they're going to need Cade Horton soon enough. I actually think that Cade is going to show up in the next 2 weeks.
Well, that's a great transition then, because we did want to talk about some guys that might be coming. Although I did see you added some guys who are sticking.
I have one.
Let's hit them first then.
We've got Jose Soriano, who's kind of clumped into this of like, oh, hey, this dude is here, right?
Your boy, you put us on him. People listen to the fireside. Absolutely. You absolutely, man. Like, you know, I saw a guy throwing 100 out of the bullpen.
Yeah.
I mean, hey, for me, that's why he's on my fantasy team. So if he does well this year, you are getting that credit. I knew who he was, but I didn't know the extent to whether or not the starter transition could work. And it's been bumpy, but talk to us about Soriano. Mostly good for me.
He's similar to Jordan Hicks. Hicks, I believe, more about the sinker actually landing in the zone, while Soriano, not as much with his.
Sure.
But a more reliable secondary in Soriano with the curveball, which is a solid one. So when we saw Soriano have a bad start, I think two starts ago, it was when he just didn't have any strikes. I'm like, oh yeah, that's the floor. Cool. Awesome. Nothing. While Hicks will still always have a sinker, right? But Soriano, I mean, he throws 96 mile per hour sinkers with a 97, 98 four seamer and a good curveball. And that tracks. Just don't start him against tough teams. But like, that works for me.
I think that makes sense. Yeah.
You know,
I'm with you on playing matchups with Soriano, even in 15 teamers. I think you can sit him sometimes. But I really like what he's done. The bounce back against Cleveland, I stayed with him. Yeah. It was a little nerve wracking after the shellacking against against Minnesota. He goes to Pittsburgh this week and then a two-step St. Louis at home and at Texas. I'm starting him for all three of these. I like Jose Soriano.
I would do it, absolutely. And then there's also Tobias Myers.
Yeah, what do we think about him coming off of?
Dude, I don't know if we talked about him a bit before. I think he's so interesting.
I remember you being keen on him.
I mean, he had a terrible start his last night.
Yeah, so what, like, where do you adjust from there?
I mean, it's someone you keep your eye on. It's what's so strange about these young players, and really just any sort of sample we get really early in the season, we don't quite know what is the exception, what is the anomaly yet. Like, if you look at Mitchell Barkley, you know, the first two starts, like, the answer to me, there's always like an Occam's razor to like what's going on. And how did Mitchell Parker take down the Dodgers and what was it, the Rangers a second time?
Astros,
there we go. Yeah, wrong city.
Wrong Texas team.
It was because, yeah, he showed up and had a much better curveball than they expected the first time. The second one, he's like,
and an extra pitch.
Splitter.
The splitter came out against the Astros. Yeah.
And it was kind of funny. It was in the fourth one, he showed a slider.
This dude just keep, you know, bag of tricks, Mitchell Parker. And it hasn't been like amazing since, but Miami, they ran up his pitch count. So he only threw four innings, but only one run. And then at Texas, so he has faced both Texas teams. Mitchell Parker went 5 1/3, 3 runs. Not terrible. Like, if you picked him up, like, it's been okay. Yeah. And I'm still intrigued by him.
He gets the Orioles and lefty too. The Orioles destroy lefties.
Pass this week. Easy pass. But then he gets the White Sox next week. So do not cut Mitchell Parker.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. This is a debate I go back and forth on a ton. Is Mitchell Parker, like, okay, the 10-day stash is what I call it. Essentially, when you have a pitcher on your team and you have him for a certain start and you know you're not going to start him for the next one.
Yeah.
That's 10 days that you're holding on to a guy on your team. And is Mitchell Parker of a quality in a 12-teamer that it's worth that stash? And that's a really good question.
It is a really, really good question, especially with Mitchell Parker specifically, because you've got that at White Sox looming. If you have, you know, there are league scenarios, points leagues, head-to-head, where you got to play the whole week and really kind of manage everything. I can see cutting him and saying, hey, I'll try to get him back for the White Sox, but if somebody scoops him in the interim, I need a starter for this week. I get that.
Yeah.
But those are rare scenarios. I think Parker's done enough in these first four starts to be a 10-day stash for me to get that White Sox start. Yeah.
I'm situationally dependent. Like, if you're in weekly, I understand more so for that.
Sure.
Dailies, if you're in a normal daily league, it's something that I actually do a ton, because I mean, at the end of the list each week, I have a tier that is the 12th tier. I'm just making it like the last tier of it is just going to be one massive one every week. And this is literally just streamers for the week. This is just like, these are the guys that for this week we are cool on. And I have this lovely sheet now that tells me the expected schedules of everyone. So thank you, Josh Mockenstern. And that means I'd rather get rid of that spot and just find a streamer during this week instead. I think you have a good chance to get him back.
Right.
So
to that end, I get it.
If you're on this team, you're not picking up for the Orioles start. So, like, is someone going to stash him for 7 days or something?
That's the beauty, right? Because if Mitchell Parker does flop here a little bit, like we expect, he will not be appealing. He will not be showing up on the last 10-day chart or whatever people look at usually to pick up guys. So I will be more open to cutting him in these scenarios that I'm talking about, because you can turn around and get him right back. So get your guy for this week, because you're not using Parker against Baltimore. Right. And then on Saturday, scoop him back up or Sunday, whenever it is, because he starts Tuesday against the White Sox. So I would do it Saturday or Sunday, but I agree. Get a starter for Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, and then get your Parker back. Right. Great call.
So just to put a pin on Tobias Myers then, same kind of thing of like, well, who is the real Tobias Myers? Is he the guy that in the kitchen sink with the four seamer he spots upstairs, which had a 6+ PLV for two straight starts, which is insane because it's elite IVB and beautiful locations? Or is he the one from last start where he had no secondaries working and threw pitches down the middle or way out of the zone? Called that the donut because you have like either straight in the middle or just completely outside of the zone.
Yeah.
Right? And those are the worst. So I don't know where we're at with him. I think right now I don't start him until he showcases that he's not that donut pitcher.
Even with St. Louis donuts, on the cusp?
I don't know.
Even with St. Louis being the next matchup?
I mean, that's the tough part. Chance on that. I'm going to make that a questionable one.
I think that's fair.
So that's someone at least to keep an eye on, because also the Brewers, I mean, Bryce Wilson looked good. So
yep.
Fine. We have, you know, a brewer's crew that isn't the most exciting. And we're actually going to talk about one of those brewer's guys who could make that rotation better after this break.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So we have our games. Don't worry. We're going to get to those quickly, but I did want to hit on the other guys that are in the wings, right? Yes. There are a lot of these young arms. We're trying to figure out what to do with them. It doesn't mean we're completely out of all the exciting ones. I think there are going to be fewer this year in general. The Brewers have actually two names. There's only one mentioned here, and that's rightfully so. That's Robert Gasser, who could be up this week.
Yes.
You could even say there's Aaron Ashby in there or whatever. Aaron Ashby, I'm sorry, guys. I'm out. I know you are too.
Put him in the bullpen.
Yeah. Yep.
Move on from that. You're exactly right.
Where are you on Robert Gasser right now?
I'm pretty intrigued. He's somebody that I'm going to be looking at right when he comes up. I want to see what's going on. They got him from San Diego in the Hader deal, I believe. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's been missing some bats. Excuse me. Missing some bats down in the minors. But has had some walk issues, kind of a two-pitch guy. Well, it kind of depends on if you think that cutter can be a legitimate third pitch off the slider. Sure. I sometimes worry when guys have the sliders and the cutters. I've not seen Gasser, so I'm going all off reports, reading, stats, and all that sort of stuff. But it's a bad fastball. It's a slider cutter that are both supposed to be good, but are they differentiated enough to really be two solo pitches? And then a bad changeup. So I trust Milwaukee a lot. They get a lot of leeway with me to where any prospect they call up is at least going to get a look. So I was kind of on Myers a little earlier just from the Milwaukee love. Gasser, higher ranked prospect, I'm going to be intrigued right away and then kind of play it from there. If he gets a start against St. Louis this week, I think deeper leagues I could take the shot day one. In other leagues, I kind of want to wait and see something. So I'm pretty well intrigued by Robert Gasser of the Brewers.
So just to be clear, you were talking about the bad fastball, sweeper, cutter, bad changeup. That was Gasser, right?
Yes.
Okay, so I this is so funny. I was with you completely. And then today we got a preview of the minor league app on the stream. Mm-hmm. And the person we looked up for 2023 was Robert Gasser.
Is his stuff a lot better?
The four-seamer is super flat.
Oh, then we need to update that right. Grade ranking on him.
Yeah, I don't know. I've been
trending with him as a bad fastball.
It might still be, right? Just because it's flat doesn't mean it's great.
Doesn't mean it's inherently good. That's a great
point. He needs to put it in the right spot. He needs maybe the velocity in 92, 93. He doesn't have good extension, which we didn't have on the thing. Mm-hmm. On this one, it's not great vert. So
that's a good point.
Very, very, very possible. Still not very good. But yeah, that could be a flat one. And if you actually watch him, you can see that he kind of short arms and makes a flat arm. He's not like extending out like Heaney or Manaea, but he's pulling it in with the same kind of flatness. That makes me a little bit more inclined that he has better command than those guys, the aforementioned southpaws. But I'm curious, and he's going to get an opportunity. And it's kind of like one of those things of just like, you know what? Let's just see how this goes. Is it going to be a fastball upstairs, slider and sweeper downstairs? Like, is the cutter going to be that nullifier against right-handers? Because he needs that if it's a sweeper. If it's a sweeper, you can't really dominate with that. It needs to be that cutter inside and then the four-seamer playing on top of that. And hopefully like a backdoor sweeper, like a Chris Sale Lodolo thing. That I hope works. I'm okay taking a spec out on this when he does get the call. Just depends on the matchup. I don't know if I necessarily want to do an MLB debut. I generally don't. feel like,
and that's prudent to generally fade them. It is against
the Rays. Well,
it could be against St. Louis this week for Gasser. We don't know is part of the issue. If it is, I like going against St. Louis, but I might just wait and see.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do that
too. You don't go broke doing the wait and see approach, right? Some guys dominate, but too many sputter and struggle and have nerves and they're all over the place. So yeah, that's totally fair.
And really, I can't emphasize this enough. The, you know, I hear, oh, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. That's a phrase from like way before we had any sort of idea of data.
It's still a cool phrase to throw around for like nostalgia purposes, but it's not really
insane of like, yeah, we know Jared Jones is dope and we know that Paul Skeens is dope and Jackson Jobe is dope and Christian Scott, we were all excited because he's dope.
The only value I would say it has anymore is just to keep reminding folks that pitchers break and so they can get hurt at any moment. We know that inherently, but the core concept of there's no such thing as a pitching prospect, tin stap, doesn't really exist anymore because of all the data we get.
There is something about being years away.
Yeah.
Like if they are close and looking dope, then that's a different thing than single A domination.
Dominating.
We don't quite know there. We don't know. You know, obviously there's time to get injured. There's, you know, Daniel Espino is a good example of that, right? Don't count your chickens before they hatch kind of situation there. However, when we're talking about guys that get promoted, it's not just a complete mystery box like it used to be. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, like in my years, I used to never talk about prospects because I didn't have any data on it and I didn't care. I was just like, I need to see them pitch. Just let me see them pitch once in the majors and then I can give you an assessment, because so many of these like highly touted guys were more for like command focus and not really stuff and looking electric. And every prospect that comes up for your fantasy teams, they have what I call the shag rug, which is a young man's floor. And every prospect has a lower floor innately because they are young and going through different things than veterans who know how to work through a game differently and change things and really adapt to the game. So they need to be an extra level above in electricity for it to be worthwhile. And it's why some of these names that we have, like I think Robert Gasser kind of is not that tier of it. There's Cade Povich. I would probably throw into that a little. He is also a flat four seamer guy, but it's not quite as amazing, I think. Mick Abel, not quite there. Will Warren with the Yankees. Like these guys to me could be good.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those where like when they do get the call, I'm not going to go chase it. But what about Cade Horton? And do you disagree with any of those takes on those guys?
I don't disagree with any of those takes. And I want to caution people on not trying to force a Fabapalooza with guys. That's what we were calling it last year with the pitcher coming up. Like once a week, there was like at least one, if not two, sometimes three, with premium pitching prospects. The pool is just not that deep. So don't force Christian Scott. He might be the bad example because he might actually be the dude, but don't force Robert Gasser and Cade Povich into Tanner Bibee and Yuri Perez roles that they're not capable of handling. Cade Horton, however, of the Cubs, may be somebody who can fill that big time role. So it might be Christian Scott, Cade Horton, Jackson Jobe, and Paul Skeens, the four that come up this year and like can really dominate. Problem is last year there were like 12. But Horton could be up sooner than later, as you've pointed out. You said he could be up in like 2 weeks, and you're not wrong. Like they could move off of Javier Assad the second that starts to wobble and just put Cade Horton in. He's got crazy good stuff, pretty deep arsenal. If he can command it properly, which is a hurdle that he needs to overcome, but he could be a game changer. And they're a contender. I think Cade Horton could be big. He's somebody I'm jumping on right away. Even if I don't start him for an opener, the second that he's available in my league, I want to get him.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Cade Horton's first AAA start was not impressive. It did not have vert on his four-seamer, did not have good extension, wasn't the flattest. And
did he walk like four or five guys too?
Yeah, he walked four batters. It's a little concerning. It does seem like Cade Horton is a, kind of like a more of a four pitch solid guy, slider, four seam, changeup, curveball. Curveball kind of like sometimes. I think only threw two in that one, but I'm a little worried. Like I feel like Cade Horton's going to be pushed in with the Christian Scott, Jared Jones, Jobe stuff. I don't think he's that
too much.
Okay. Yeah, I'm interested more so than the others, but it doesn't seem to me like this is a overwhelming guy. It's like 93, 94 on that fastball in that game too. It's just not as electric as we want it to be for Kate Holden.
I can understand that. He's somebody I still want to jump. I don't know. I just have some times where it's like, and I'm not saying like he's not giving his all in the minors or anything. Of course he is. But like guys hit a different level when they come to the majors. And I don't know if it's just adrenaline or what, but I do wonder if like he's just going to be better. Mm-hmm. You know, when they're ready to call him up, are some of those command issues going to go away? And right. He's just going to be like, because, you know, for his four starts in AAA or in AA before the call up, he wasn't walking guys. He was striking guys out. That was kind of the glimpse of the great Cade Horton. Mm-hmm. But throughout most of the rest of his time, he's had inconsistencies with his control at times that make you wonder, like, what's he going to be? Right. And being part of a good team with the win potential, that gives, for me, for fantasy purposes, I'm still interested because even if he's not doing his best ERA and whip standpoint, if I can get the wins, I'll take it. So
yeah,
he's still somebody I want to jump on day one, but I agree with you. Don't put him necessarily with Jobe, Skeens.
Yeah, no.
And do you think Scott's up there with those two, by the way? Is he quite that
I
high?
Would say he's, I'd say he's a tier below, but he's still a tier above these
and
guys.
Then Horton's a tier below that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair.
Yeah. And also actually I'm looking at this now. I'm seeing how much horizontal movement he's getting on his four seam. And that might actually just been a cutter. Yeah, it's kind of interesting. They have it as a four-seamer, but it looks like it's more of a cutter. So actually, now I'm thinking like, okay, Kyle Bradish, and how good is the slider? Is the slider like the best thing ever? I don't know. So I'm curious about that at the very least.
I mean, that it was graded to be that way whenever the prospect reports were taken on Cade Horton, mm-hmm. That the slider is like premium. So... I mean, we don't know. Maybe, I guess we'll have to see it.
If that is a cutter, that does make me a little bit more encouraged of like, okay, can you spot this well? Then that actually could work much better than the just like, no, this is a four-seamer that just has pretty bad movement. So I'm curious about that one. There is one other like actual elite prospect. I know it sounds crazy. We haven't mentioned them on this. It's someone that I remember last year being so hyped about. I'm going to compare him to like Matt Brash though.
Okay.
It's Jacob Mizorowski.
Yeah, there you go with Milwaukee. Right?
And I haven't really checked in too much this year, but I was talking to Rudy Ropp, who's doing our top 10 pitching prospects to stash for redraft leagues. Love, he's doing great work with it. He sends me a list each week. We talk about it, so we want to be on the same page about stuff. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned Mizorowski. I was like, oh, he's actually doing well. I was like, yeah, he's doing well. I'm like, oh, man. Because Mizorowski throws like 100 with a slider and a cutter.
Killer stuff. He's going to be their next great reliever if starting doesn't work.
So this is the thing is like, you're going to see hype for Mizorowski if he is actually starting for the Brewers and they're going to say he's going to come up.
No doubt. That's,
I think, the next big one for everybody to be aware of.
I agree with that. If it's not Jobe or Skeens coming up, when Mizorowski comes up, there's going to be hype. His stuff is incredible. 18% walk rate this year, 15 last year. Just be aware of the potential downside. But if it clicks, he is game changing.
He's a general disarray.
Absolutely.
Right? The neck beard. Yeah. The neck beard being around the zone and nibbling. General disarray is like throw it down the middle and hope for the best.
And that's what he says. Here it is. Hit it. They don't usually hit it, but sometimes they sit up there with the bat on their shoulder and they get a free pass five pitches later.
Oh, man. All right. So we've got games here. We got to transition out of this. Hope you guys enjoyed all of the prospect talk. We didn't really get to like AJ Smith, Shaver, and Waldrop. I don't
Kirsten
think he has like major things. Waldrop to me is a reliever.
I think
he is with you too. McAble, slider focus, and maybe there's something there when the Phillies need help, but we'll see. And Will Warren's like a, I don't know, like a Clark Schmidt type, essentially.
Yes, and so is Chase Hampton. Those are both kind of guys that could eat up some innings, be Clark Schmidt-y, which has some value, but it really is for the deeper leagues.
Exactly. Clayton Beter. Actually, Clayton Beter is more the four-seamer slider mold.
And
of like
he's already on the 40, too, so he has a chance to maybe be a guy they'd go to over Warren and Hampton before they get
up. It's not a big impact combination, in my view, so you don't really need to touch those. But all right, games. We're gonna do this. We're gonna hit on one of them. Actually, let's do a review of last week. How did we do, Spore? It was all right. I believe you were winning last week.
I was, but I am no longer. Actually, I thought you took the lead after last week's sweep. So I think you were up once.
Oh yeah, we swept up. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
The streamers. We are very sorry. We led y'all comically astray.
I had both on one team, by the way. So we
recommended Trevor Rogers and Jose Quintana. If you started both, have fun with your negative 28 points that we got you.
Jeez, sorry, guys.
So we both get a darn thing for that. That was our worst performance of the year by miles. If we do that again, we might need to pack it up. That's just our worst. That was Trevor Rogers versus Oakland and Jose Quintana versus Tampa Bay. They were not bad picks. They both just flopped.
They were
then
terrible.
The sit of the week, double win though. Nick Lodolo, 63% versus Baltimore, only 11 points. That's very sittable. Aaron Civale, 58% versus the Mets.
Yeah,
2 points.
The Civale one, nice.
So we nailed both of those.
The center of that one, and you killed it with that. I'm actually surprised. Lodolo got 11. I guess he got enough strikeouts.
Exactly. Okay. So, but we both get a point there.
Around,
that's a win for both of us. Okay. Then we jump to the star of the week. This is 50% or lower rostered at Fantasy Pros. We're trying to hit on somebody big. You mentioned Tobias Myers earlier.
Yeah,
that's,
right. There you go.
That's who you picked.
Yeah, no.
And when you talked him up, it didn't go well. He walked 4 -2. Now, this is the one where we need a ruling because I don't know what our threshold is. I picked Jack Flaherty.
Oh, yeah, no.
31% versus St. Louis. Yeah.
You get this. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Of course. I mean, I know you picked it after the 16 strikeout game.
Yeah.
I think you did. But yeah, I mean, still, like, he carried it on. The four seamer was still great. I'm like, yeah, Jack Flaherty is here to stay, kind of thing.
Okay. So 17 points for him.
You get that.
I'll take a dub. But then you close out with a resounding dub. Logan Gilbert versus Framber Valdez, 30-1. Gilbert dominated. Framber was not there. I liked the matchup. I had no problem taking Framber. I'm a big Framber fan. He was coming off the gem in Mexico City. So I figured, hey, he can handle Seattle here. And he just didn't quite have it. Meanwhile, Gilbert stayed hot, continued to be excellent. So I take the L there. So add it all up. 11 points for Nick, 10 points for Paul. You're still one ahead right now.
Oh, this is fun. And not to mention, like, yeah, of course, I totally knew that Framber Valdez would just not throw a slider anymore.
Where did it go?
Absolutely. And it's actually really cool that Gilbert's throwing cutters, and those cutters are saving him completely.
Love Gilby.
He didn't have it last year, and I was such a – this is a big whiff for me, Logan Gilbert, because –
But he changed, right? Like, you didn't like the –
I mean, but the thing is, a lot of the times, like, a guy like Gilbert, like, you have to anticipate some change a lot. And it's about figuring out which are the guys that can change and figure something out.
That's a good point.
And I didn't think that he would at all. So huge props to Gilbert for figuring that out. And I'll say he can still be better if his four seamer is better located than it currently is.
That would be huge. And he's already having a game changing type season, 169 ERA, 79 whip. So you get the dub there. Kind of games do we got for this week?
So we've got to go over our picks this week, and we're going to go over that after this break.
Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So, games this week. We have our stream of the week. And who is it for you? This is under 20% rostered at Fantasy Pros.
I'm actually going for somebody who's already popped off this week, so I feel like I'm cheating a little bit. But hey, he's a start-to-start guy that we have to figure out if we can trust. And I'm saying, yes, let's trust Bryce Wilson again. After the 6 innings of one hit ball in KC, we're going to run him right back out there for the St. Louis start. This could be a fabulous 2-start week for Bryce Wilson, who's like a solid guy. He's a flat out Toby, but Toby that we can definitely utilize right now. St. Louis is 4th worst in WOBA against righties. That's weighted on base average with a 289 mark. That is horrendous. They are a team to pick on. I like the win opportunity. I don't know if we're going to get 6 Ks in 6 innings again. Take your 3-4 Ks if that's all you get. Hopefully you get a win. Low ERA, and I really like Bryce Wilson to stay hot. He's been wonderful this year. St. Louis, I don't think that they're going to get to him here. So I like Bryce Wilson.
Yeah, this is a fun one. Wilson looked so good against the Reagans yesterday. And
great matchup.
Surprisingly so.
Yeah. I thought Reagans was going to walk to a dub. Bryce Wilson had other things about that.
Games of like two runs for his team or something like that.
Yeah.
Wilson just avoided the heart of the plate super, super, super well. So that's a great call because the Cardinals are just so bad right now. I'm trying to figure out a name for this. It used to be the Cardinals. It was a Cardinal sin to go against them because they were so good.
It's a Cardinal sin to roster their hitters. Jeez.
It's a you deck of cards as in like you deck them. Okay. Terrible. I know. I'm workshopping. Okay.
I know. I'm happy to give you the feedback though. And you need direct feedback on that one was terrible.
It's actually pretty easy. It's a birthday card. Because it happens once a year and you're really happy about it. I just needed a second longer.
Just need a little extra time there. You got there.
I'm going with Logan Allen from Cleveland against the White Sox. He's doing the Blake Snell blueprint actually pretty well. His four seamer is upstairs and he has the changeup and slider down. It's kind of funny. Him and the Arizona one, I think, are messing up our player pages a little bit and it's pretty hilarious.
But, same with my data polls on my. Now I don't have anything sophisticated. I just got run of the mill things. But he had a 2.25 ERA on my SP chart today, and they're like, "That's not Logan Allen." I was like, "You're exactly right. It's pulling the wrong Logan Allen. Can we get a middle initial LT in there, Dave? Help me out."
LT. Yep. I think it's LT. It's crazy.
Correct.
I'm going with that one as my streamer. 16% rostered. Feels pretty easy. It's a great two step this week, actually. He's going today against the Tigers first, and then White Sox over the weekend. So
he and McKenzie both got that beautiful two step that you got
to
jump on.
So funny to me. He's like I said on the Plus Pitch this morning, like he's a marathon runner who's just so exhausted by like the third mile, and like it just somehow finishes. You know,
such a good way to put it, dude. And since the news has come out of the partially torn UCL, he's been his best, which is hilarious.
It's absolutely maddening. Sit of the week, 50% plus fantasy pros. I'm doing a ridiculous one that's today. It's Jose Berríos at Philadelphia. And I just think that the signs of degradation are here. It's
okay. Talk to us about them.
Yeah. We see this every year because he's the great undulator, of course.
Correct.
Where Berríos lives and dies a lot by his curveball, as long as he has a fastball that works. Curveball's getting worse right now. It used to be something that he would go down and arms a glove side with. We saw come closer to the zone last time against the Royals. I think he got away with one there. The sinker and four seamer is this weird mold of like, I guess this works. I feel as if we're seeing the worst turn for Berríos of the year. And we normally see the ups and downs. This is just what he does. We've had a great run that we know is unsustainable. Fine. But this is the Phillies, even without Trey Turner in Philadelphia. I'm not a fan of this. I know he's a 95% roster. You're still going to do it. I get it. I think this is a terrifying one for me.
I would start him, obviously. I say obviously just because the guy with the MLB best 144 ERA. But I'm also going to make the case that I don't hate it because we do know regression is going to come with him, right? Like even if he has an amazing season, it's not going to be a 144 ERA for Jose Berríos. So if you're trying to dodge some of the regression, this is a spot where you would do it at Philly. He gets at Baltimore to open next week too. Mm. You might sit him for two. Again, if you're trying to be super meticulous and really thread your needles, I don't recommend this. I will be honest. I just play my studs. But if you are trying to get out from under some potential regression candidate starts at Philly and at Baltimore, the next two for Berríos, they're the right ones. Okay. Now, the problem is next week, it's a two-step. So to sit Baltimore, you'd have to lose the Tampa Bay start. And I can't do that in a weekly move.
But daily, you could
do both. So I like where your principle's at with it, even though I wouldn't follow it.
Now, can you do us all a favor and say his last name one more time?
Berríos.
Oh, my gosh. That's amazing. I can't do that.
I can't really roll my R's, but it's Berríos.
I cannot at all, and it drives me up the wall.
I do my white man best.
I mean, yeah, this is a solid sit of the week. I'm on board with this one that you got.
I'm actually kind of turning the tide on somebody too that I've been positive on, but here we're going to try to avoid some potential danger with Luis Severino and sit him against Atlanta, right? So I'm not taking too many risks by sitting somebody against Atlanta. It's again a guy I like, and I talk about team streamers, which is just a fancier name for a streamer that you don't cut when you're not starting them. That's what Severino is to me. I pick and choose starts, but I'm never cutting him back into the pool because he's too good to let go, in my opinion, at least for now. We'll see if he holds up. But yeah, the core skills are not very strong right now. 12% strikeout minus walk, 9% swinging strike rate. There's some issues there. Atlanta could really punish him for those. You got to sit this one out in all formats, even 15 teamers.
I'm out. What's so funny to me, I talked about Yankee molds, and there's like the sinker sweeper type, and then there's the Severino type, which is four seamer and slider, right?
Yeah.
And Severino, guess what he did in his last start? 29% sweepers.
Wow.
What?
What is that?
I don't know.
What is that?
Oh man, it's like that's not you. And you
no, that is really it's so surprising. Strange.
The guy, I think, just trying to figure something out. And Atlanta,
that's it. Six walks against Tampa Bay. He's just like, I don't know what the heck to do right now. This team's, you know, the Bart Simpson meme. Oh, Nelson's scoring points off me now. Like, that's how he probably felt about Tampa Bay. Like, Tampa Bay's cooking me right now. And I only say that because Tampa Bay has been hitting horribly. They're a good team, y'all. I think they're going to be fine. But their offense has been putrid. And that was a good spot for Seve to get good. And he walked six.
Now, star of the week. We're moving to that one. We're staying kind of with the Yankee theme a little bit. Who's your star of the week?
Going to the guy who is trying to emulate peak Severino. It's Luis Gil. We'd say it all the time. We're not saying that just because they're both Luises from Tampa Bay, but it's the same type of mold there.
And it's two starts this week, I think. It's got the Astros tonight.
That's
and
right.
Then he has and then the Rays later this weekend.
And I'm really excited about it. He's coming off a really good outing against Baltimore, which was a nerve-wracking one. I start Gil everywhere in my 15 teamers, but I'm always a little bit nervous, even though I watch most of his starts. And he was excellent out there in Baltimore. And that was really encouraging. 6 1/3 scoreless, five strikeouts, one walk. Can't wait to see what he can do here in this start. We just talked about how the Rays are a team to pick on. I really like Heel, Freudian slip there. I like Heel to have a big week with both starts. Even against Houston, I like him. But against Tampa Bay, he's a no-brainer for me. Hopefully, he doesn't follow Severino and walk six Tampa Bay Rays, though.
Yeah, that'd be pretty nice. I mean, yeah, it's about strikes for Luis Gil, as we talked about before. I really hope that he brings that. I'm going to go Andrew Abbott at San Francisco.
Love it.
Someone that I've been pretty negative about.
Same.
However, I'm starting to see Abbott find his rhythm and... Something that I really pointed out last year was that I didn't know how he was having his success during his hot stretch. It was so unsustainable, 90% left on base rates, etc. It fell off by the end of the year. But what we've seen now is, okay, cool. I am going to throw four seamers effectively upstairs, and I am going to feature my curveball and sweeper in the zone and down. And it does look like it's coming together more for Andrew Abbott. Now he goes to Oracle Park, and that feels like a start where he has a great game. And everyone goes, oh, right. Andrew Abbott was like the hot thing of July.
That's right.
And he gets picked up everywhere. So he's only at 32% roster now. I think that number is going to shoot up after this start against the Giants. So
why doesn't he miss bats, though? Like,
because he doesn't really command super well. And he did last time.
Yeah. 8 Ks against Baltimore.
Four seamer was a little bit at the beginning of last year. I thought that's not going to stick. And sometimes a curve and or slider really turn into that, really sweeper. But I think he's starting to actually locate a little bit better and find his rhythm. So I'm excited about that one.
That's a good start.
Okay, so here's the thing, guys. Spore listed out like 10 different games that we could do as our one game matchup. So many. There's some really good ones in there. We have Gilbert versus Pablo Lopez, which we just did almost with Gilbert. Yeah. And like that would be just so hard for me to choose because I got Pablo Lopez in there. I'm like, oh my gosh. There's like Christian Scott versus Charlie Morton. You got the different matchups and everything. There's a lot of really fun ones in here. But this one, I think, is I love both of these guys. We haven't done one, I think, with either of them yet. Mm-mm. And I can go either side. It's Yusei Kikuchi versus Joe Ryan. Which side are you on, Spore?
So, you know, Kikuchi's a guy that I've had some trepidation with. Like, is the homer suppression real? So you said, hey, I've been in on Kikuchi. I'll get that one. Let me get Joe Ryan. Now, he's a guy that I had a little bit of negativity on this year because the price I thought had risen to a point where I didn't want to pay full freight. Mm-hmm. And I always struggle with this in fantasy. A guy you love and they elevate up the ADP board. Is there a cutoff where you say, oh, now it's too expensive? Or do you just stick with your guy come hell or high water? I started to peel away from Joe Ryan a little bit, but he's been excellent. The walk rate's even better this year at 4%. More importantly, though, he's limiting the homers. And that's my biggest concern with him is the homers. 1.1 rate, we can live with that. Sure. Anything in the low ones with Joe Ryan, we can live with. Velo's up about a mile and a half as well. So we've seen some good things. I think this is a great matchup here. We could both end up having big scores from our guys. But I take the Joe Ryan side against Kikuchi. You're going with Kikuchi. What have you seen from him? Now, this home run suppression started last summer. How real is it? And are we going to get it all year from Kikuchi?
Yeah, so I'm ignoring the first start of the year with Kikuchi because that's when he went more changeup than curveball. He's like, I got a new changeup. I'm going to try this. Oh, this is bad. Never mind. Yeah. And he's thrown like 5% changeup since. So
and been excellent.
Yeah, he's been phenomenal. 2.29 ERA, 105 whip, 28% K rate, just a 4% walk rate. In
and
those six
one
games.
Homer in those
and
six
exactly,
games.
4% homer fly ball rate. His PLV, though, in that time, 5.55. And that's across everything. So Kikuchi is actually, including the first start, 10th best PLV of every starting pitcher in the majors right now. Our model loves him. This is based on locations of curveballs getting a ton of strikes. Same with sliders. Fastball at 70% strike rate and being an effective non-mistake pitch, only 2% mistakes with that four-seamer is a huge deal for that pitch. And it's helping limit the home runs. The curveball only has a 4% mistake rate. It's pretty great. And actually, I would even say that the slider is not as good as it was last year. We had an 18% swinging strike rate last year, 20% in 2022, just 14% thus far. I've seen some games with Kikuchi where he just doesn't have it. And
but
it was better last time out.
Right. The improvements elsewhere are carrying and suffocating that.
Oh, absolutely. Four-seamer and curveball are great. The four-seamer is actually at times locating higher than last year and then other times not. It's actually, that's the number one thing with Kikuchi for me. He has such a flat four-seamer. It's 97th percentile in how flat it is. He also has 7 feet of extension. And when I see super flat and I see good extension, I see 95, I'm like, oh, that's Zach Wheeler. The only problem is that Zach Wheeler knows how to command his four-seamer. And Kikuchi throws sub 40% high locations this year on it. That said, in the games where he didn't have a slider, he was able to actually locate that four-seamer and get through it. And I really hope that is a trend that continues for him. At the end of the day, I see a surprisingly stable pitcher. He has a three-pitch mix that has been here since June of last year. It's more of the same. The Jays should win more games, I hope. Is that offense any good? You tell me. But Kikuchi at least has a six-inning darling. Already has four quality starts in seven games. I'm a fan of him. And it's tough because Joe Ryan's an ace is going to ace, man. He's an idiot.
Yeah.
He's an idiot. He has it. It's there. But I'm going to go with Kikuchi.
I think it could be a great matchup. I really, really hope they deliver. And I'll be watching this one for sure.
Whoever gets more points. It doesn't matter if they both get like
that's
20
true.
Plus.
That's
whoever
true.
Whoever gets more points wins.
There is a definitive winner here. Yeah, they could both throw seven scoreless. But if Kikuchi gets one more strikeout than Ryan, I'm taking the L.
You know, there
or
you
if one of them gets the win, that could be. Yeah, we use DraftKings points. So W's matter here.
It does. It does. Good luck, Spore.
Good luck to you as well. Good luck to you as well. And again, you have a 1-point lead after giving me the Jack Flaherty dub. It's 11-10, Nick. We've had some great weeks here. At least we split up a little bit this week after back-to-back sweeps, me first, then you, the two previous weeks. So yeah, I'm excited about this group and I feel confident, maybe I'm going crazy, but I feel confident saying we won't go double negative on the streamer recommendations this week.
Oh my gosh. Why would you say that?
That's
why would you say that?
Why even put it out into the ether is a fair question, but man. I'm risky like that.
And with that statement, I can see now the sizzle of the fire has ceased with the smoke curling up as I think the end of our fireside chat has arrived. Spore, it has been an absolute pleasure, of course, sitting with you by the fire today. Is there anything that you want to let everybody know about that you're going to be doing this week?
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been wonderful per usual. I will have a new SP ranking out this week.
Oh,
yeah, I got to get it done. So I got to crunch a little bit. I'm going out of town for a little quick weekend. John over to San Diego, going to catch a game. San Diego Padres, Padres Dodgers, I should say. Should be a lot of fun. But yeah, I got to kind of cram the 5 days of work into 4 days. So everything should be situated with that. So follow over at FanGraphs, new pitcher list, new starting pitcher ranking list updated, and then Nick and I can
compare. Call it a pitcher list. No,
can't, no. Oh. I've heard that's used somewhere. I'll have to check out that site and see
all
how they're
about
doing
the SEO,
over there.
Baby. No, actually it might be a fun fireside next week just to look at the major differences that we have.
Love it. Yeah, it's a great idea.
That every Monday. But Spore, great to see you here. Always wonderful hanging with you by the fire. My name is Nick Pollock. On behalf of Paul Spore, thanks for being here at the Fireside Chat.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter at Spore and at PitcherList.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.